Welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast, the podcast that takes you on a journey into the world of leadership, offering a deep dive into the minds of accomplished leaders from various fields around the world. I'm your host, Amanda Jane, originally from the north of Ireland and now living in beautiful Cheshire, England. Together, we'll explore the strategies, experiences, and wisdom that have shaped these incredible leaders into the visionaries they are today through solo episodes and interviews. I'm a leadership and communications coach myself, and I'm passionate about promoting a coaching culture in the workplace, as well as empowering leaders to flourish personally and thrive professionally. Whether you're a seasoned executive, an aspiring leader in business, or someone simply fascinated by the art of leadership, each episode will provide valuable insights, practical tips, and inspiring stories. So get ready for a dose of motivation, innovation, and leadership brilliance on the Leadership Insights Podcast, brought to you by amandajane.co.uk. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast. And today I have with me Angela Scott from The Culture Principle. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Amanda.
Thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Not a problem.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, me too. So before we get started, have you had a chance to think about your motivational quote? Oh, we'll start with your song, if you'd rather start with your song.
We can start with the song. So this was really tough because first of all, with the song, I have a whole playlist of motivational songs depending on the mood. So I picked the one that kind of was resonating with me at the moment. And it's a song called Woman by Andrea Triana. If you've not heard of it, it's. I'll read you some of my favourite lyrics from it and then we can kind of talk about this. But they said, love don't fail if you're trying. I knew in my heart I would succeed. When times get hard, you've got to keep on fighting. All these battles, yes, they made the best of me. Ooh. And so it's a song that's about embracing the person that you are. It's about self-love. And it reminds me of, I often have this image of myself as an 8-year-old child, and I'm holding the 8-year-old child's hand when times are really tough. Mm-hmm. I think when we hear those voices in our head, we're talking to the little girl, not the woman. So yeah. That's why that song is quite motivating for me.
Those lyrics are really powerful. I don't know that song, but I will look that up. But I just love those lyrics. I can see why you chose that, definitely. And have you got a motivational quote, or did you have another song?
No, I had a quote. Again, interesting because, you could have all sorts of quotes here from famous people and sometimes think it go through your mind. But I picked quite a funny one, actually. If you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one.
Oh, yes.
Now, do you know who said that? Allegedly?
Oh, I want to guess. And I'm not going to say who I think it is. Can you tell me?
According to the internet, it's Dolly Parton, but the internet also tells me that, and I actually had it on my wall thinking it was Dolly Parton, uh-huh. But the internet also tells me that no one actually knows when she said these exact words, but they seem like the words that, yeah, Dolly Parton would say to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I really admire her for, she's had a lot of stick over the years, mm-hmm, and not been necessarily treated as a successful businesswoman, mm-hmm, that she is.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a motivational quote for me on a couple of levels, on that level as a woman, but also in terms of looking at your life. And if you don't like where it is, being able to like pivot in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the work that I do now and have done, I guess, throughout my career is helping other people with change. And people find it difficult. I think, mm-hmm, another quote that I thought of including actually was, people are fine with change except when it happens to them. Change, sometimes it's easier, but when change happens to you, it's difficult to deal with. And to be honest, I often find that change, even when you choose it, is difficult.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I totally get that of how when it happens to other people. But I can see what you mean about Dolly Parton. I've always loved her. And she has had, I think she's had a bad time in the press. But that quote is, I perceive that another way,
stop moaning and get on with it. You know, change your circumstances yourself, and no one's coming to rescue you. You have to make the change happen for yourself. But she said quite a few motivational things, hasn't she?
Yeah.
But she does a lot of philanthropic work, doesn't she? She does a lot, and I've always liked her. She's a wise woman, definitely a wise woman. And have you got a book? Now, it doesn't have to be a motivational book, and some people
it is actually. And so I'm the kind of person that doesn't read a book at a time. I have a pile of books that I read, and some people find this quite bizarre, and some people completely relate to this. It'll be interesting to, you know, to hear from your listeners if they really relate to one or the other. But so I would typically read like a couple of non-fiction books, a couple of fiction books, something like a recipe book, you know, lots of different topics.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I can much more easily dive in and out. But the book that I've picked actually is a book that I go back to time and time again. And actually, when I can't sleep at night, when I have insomnia, it's a book that I have as an audio book. A book called The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
Oh, my daughter read that. Yes. And she told me about that, and I haven't read it, but it sounds wonderful.
Well, for me, there's a few themes in this, and the reason mm-hmm. why it's my favourite book. I think it's great when you have insomnia, first of all, because it's a series of short stories, actually, mm-hmm. that you can just go back into. And the reason why it's a series of short stories is the main character, Norma, is placed in a midnight library, in a library, an endless library, mm-hmm. where she's able to access her, you know, parallel universes of her life based on different opportunities and different choices and decisions that she's made in her past. So it's kind of this fascinating view of someone looking at, you know, regret and how regret can shape the perception of our lives, about choices and consequences of our actions. But one of the biggest themes for me that kind of sticks, and I think it's helped me with the transition that I've been through recently, is the meaning of success. So we often think of success in our lives as being material success or money. And I think as you get more experienced and as you get older, you get a bit more introspective and realize that that isn't everything, and you start looking for a lot more meaning in your life. I think, you know, the main thing in this book that Nora discovers is that success isn't some sort of destination. It's definitely a journey. But what I would say is if you're not on the right train towards some sort of destination, mm-hmm. If you're actually on the wrong train, then you're never going to reach, you know, you're not going to reach that part of your journey that you really want to. But yeah, I just love it. And the fact that you can dive in and out of all these different realities, I wish I could have that experience once.
I know, and it's just such an incredible concept, isn't it? And if you're applying it to your own life or your own circumstances, the possibilities are endless. So when you say you read many books on the go, mm-hmm. so do you read, you're talking physical books, so you dip it in out of actual physical books?
Both, actually. Yeah. So I have physical books. I'm still a physical book person. I mm-hmm. find it's better for the eyes as well than looking mm-hmm. at screen too much. So I do like to rest my eyes and actually read a book sometimes. But I do like audiobooks too, interchangeable. I like podcasts too. So I think it's really great now. I mean, I think back to when I was growing up, we just kind of had books and sets.
Yes.
The content that we have access to now.
Yeah, I've always been a great reader all my life. And when I was a lot younger, that was basically what you did. And, you know, I've noticed young people these days, they don't buy magazines. They don't know what a comic is. And when I was younger, I remember getting a pile of magazines or comics, and, you know, we passed them around the family or we passed them around friends. And it was the greatest thing in the world to get this pile of comics and books as well. We passed around the family. But nowadays I do love an audiobook and podcast, because I can multitask and I'm usually doing something else or I'm traveling. But yeah, I have sort of gravitated over towards the audio thing, but I never take it for granted. I love the fact that I can listen to an audiobook, and I love it even more if it's read by the author. And I just think that's the biggest treat, isn't it, that you're listening to that person. Anyway, let's move on. The debate about audiobooks and actual books. So can you share your leadership journey and some key milestones that have shaped your career?
Yeah, so I think I've just moved out of corporate career of 25 years, actually slightly longer than that, but 25 years in the technology industry. And I was running at such a pace that I actually didn't take a step back to think about a lot of these milestones when I was in these roles. But I think the big pivot point, and I think this is experienced by a lot of people when they think about leadership, was when I first directly managed people. So I'd been working as a kind of consultant, management consultant for some time, doing a lot of project work, quite often in charge of running projects and needing to lead through influence. But the biggest change for me was when I became a first-line manager, not only of a small group of people, but a group of people who were a different nationality to me and based in a completely different country. So I had all mm-hmm. these kind of changes to do. And I think the real surprise for me was that I realized that I'd been leading for quite some time without realizing it. But actually, these people were just like, oh, hello, Angela. We're really excited to work for you. You know, what are we here for? What's our vision? All that kind of stuff. And I was able to articulate it quite well. And I was like, oh, this seems easier than I thought. Why didn't I do this sooner?
That's a theory of mine, actually. People just emerge as these leaders, don't they? Because people just automatically look to you and what do we do now? What's next? And if you've naturally assumed that role.
Yeah. I actually play that role with my friends. So, I mean, if they're listening to this, they will recognize that.
You're the organizer and yes. Oh, cool, we're going out next Thursday. So you were leading people from, so not only from a physical place in the office, this was people globally then?
Yeah, so I started off having a team in one country, and obviously as my career evolved, it mm-hmm. moved into kind of multiple teams in multiple countries. But I've spent most of my career in tech actually working hybrid or working remotely. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a massive shock to me when this happened during the pandemic, although the travel was taken out of the equation. Mm-hmm. But my leadership has always had to be from afar, from a distance, and then building those relationships on those, you know, limited opportunities that I had to meet in person. And that's even changed now post-pandemic, with a lot of people having complete teams working for them that they don't either get to meet very infrequently or not at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that taught me a lot about why that was, it's quite a special skill to develop genuine connections with people who you've met a couple of times or who you just see like for a couple of days once a month. It's very different to forming those relationships over, you know, lunch or going for a drink after work. I didn't really have any of that after the age of 25. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any of that because I was always either working remotely at home or in a UK office or traveling somewhere.
Yeah, I noticed that too, actually. And over the pandemic, I was managing my team remotely, and we were getting on with the job, but everything was very lean. It was, this is what we need to do. Let's do it. Meeting, let's do it. Let's do it. And when we gradually went back to the office, I realized it was more, how's the family? What did you watch last night? And there was a lot more of enrichment in the conversation. So I can imagine you haven't done that for such a long time. That was absent from, you know, from your general working life, that kind of getting to know the human rather than the worker.
Yeah. And you have to, you know, you have to be a much more intentional when you're fully remote, I think. It's not that you need specific different skills, in my view, but you have to kind of be very much more intentional about developing those relationships. And I think for me, there has to be this foundation of trust. Mm. And it's one of the reasons why I called my business what I did is because I think all businesses need to be built on this foundation of trust. All teams need to be built on trust. Think about your relationships in your personal life. If there was no trust, you wouldn't have a relationship. And it's no different, actually, in your work life.
Yeah, it's the absolute key. So that leads me on then. So you left that nice, safe world, that very interesting world, and you branched out on your own. That must have been a challenge. And that leads me on to the next question, the specific challenges. So how did that evolve? What drove you? Was that a conscious choice?
Yeah, really interesting question. And I think it's a very long answer, but I'll kind of try and keep it fairly short. I think what led me to this was that I was always a bit of a generalist in a technology industry where specialization was really valued. And I think a lot of people experience this in different industries as well. It's not just a technology industry specific thing. I was always much more interested in moving across departments and understanding what was happening in that part of the business. It's almost like being what I would call an intrapreneur. So you're in a large business, but you're able to quickly grasp what's going on over here and actually add value quite quickly. And I think, unfortunately, when you have a non-linear career, it's often very misunderstood. So I think if I look at some of my peers and where they are now, they're probably in much more senior roles than I ended up in, you know, a CEO kind of equivalent levels. But I was always much more interested in what's this thing over here and what's this thing over here. So I knew for some time, actually, that I wanted to do my own thing. But when you're in a very comfortable position, it's difficult to make the move.
Yes, I can imagine.
Yeah. And but, you know, I sometimes joke that I kind of did this sort of by stealth. But the people around me who really knew me knew exactly what was going on. I stayed in my job. I did a part-time master's degree in organisational psychology, which really helped me understand a lot of theory. Not particularly a theoretical person, but I felt like I'd wanted to learn some new things outside of the echo chamber that I'd been in for such a long time. And I was really lucky that I had such a fantastic bunch of people on my course. And I learned as much from them as I did from the course, which I'm sure resonates with a lot of people listening. Mm-hmm. It was very much about the experience for me rather than the stamp. Because people at the end said, "Well, you must be really proud to get your degree." And I said, "Well, not really. It was more fun doing it."
Yeah.
So that kind of set me up for the idea for my business. But I still wasn't quite brave enough to do it. But it got to the point, I had a big birthday coming up, and I just said, you know what? There's no time like the present. My parents are still young. If I set up my own business, I'll have some time to spend with them when I want to, and I can work whenever I want to. So I decided to give it a go. Uh-huh. And I'm sort of a few months in now. It's difficult sometimes. I miss having a team because I'm on my own at the moment. I have people that work for me part-time sometimes, but I don't have anyone else in my business at the moment. So that's a massive change. Having teams around you constantly. But all things considered, it feels like, and I know you'll appreciate this, Amanda, because I've listened to some of your previous podcasts, it feels like I was probably on a river on a boat before, going pretty happily along, sometimes a bit bumpy. But now I've left the harbour and I'm on the open sea. It's a bit more scary, but actually it seems a lot more full of possibilities for me now.
It strikes me that you are a very people focused person.
Yeah.
And we've talked about change, and I just wonder if you're acutely aware of the change that you put yourself through and that transition from being surrounded by a lot of people that have so much in common with you to suddenly finding yourself you're not as alone as you think. You know, even though it's your business, you've got these other people around you, and I think as your business evolves, you'll start to build up that network again. Yeah. And from, you know, what did you say, entrepreneur, peeping into other departments and seeing what you do, you just strike me as a very sort of people-centric person. But if you're still quite new, I mean, the world is your oyster, absolutely. And but to reach a big birthday, to give yourself that choice and think, actually, do you know what, I really want to do this. And I love it when people just think, I want to do this out of choice rather than situation. And isn't that the greatest gift in the world, that you can think, I choose this rather than I'm forced to do this.
And it is
I think it's an absolute gift. And how's it going? Are you glad you made the leap?
Yeah, some days not. Some days absolutely. And today is one of the absolutely days, so that's good.
Yeah.
I think just feel like I have a lot more freedom, and actually I have an opportunity. You know, I coach individual leaders and teams. I can facilitate, and I can also go in and kind of lift a few lids up and say, let's have a conversation about this. I think I've seen this, but you tell me. So it's not around, I think. Sometimes in my previous corporate roles, you sometimes feel a little bit kind of boxed in and not able to kind of stretch your wings out. And I definitely feel a lot more free to be myself now, which is really nice.
And it's your own brand, isn't it? It's your own way of doing things.
Yeah.
So with all that experience and your business, who inspires you? Do you have anyone, any role models in your life or anyone that inspires you?
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about who was inspiring me just the other day, because I was thinking about my journey. I was preparing to speak to some students actually at Bath University, near where I live, and I knew that they'd ask me this question, and immediately I was surprised. Actually, I came up with lots of men.
Interesting.
And you know, I there's this legacy of the great man, you know, people are born to be leaders, which I don't really believe in. Mm-hmm. But when I think about the leaders that inspired me, they've got something in common, and I'll give you some names. Nelson mm-hmm. Mandela,
yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr., yeah. Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a big space fan, and I once met Gene Kranz, who was the flight controller of Apollo 13.
Ooh.
Yeah, I once met him. He did a keynote speech in San Francisco that I was at. Amazing.
Wow.
We all have one thing in common, mm-hmm. in that they were able to channel anger or anxiousness into something very constructive.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to deal with very tough situations and turn that around to be deeply inspiring to the people around them. If you think about it, particularly the first three that I mentioned, you know, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi,
mm-hmm.
they were all in situations where they should have been, by rights, very angry.
Yeah.
Admittedly, at the beginning, they dealt with that very differently. But I think if you look at their legacy, I think what it's taught me is the power of positive action, and that we shouldn't always treat anger as a bad thing. Because it's actually a powerful emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm not saying is let's all lose our temper, mm-hmm. left, right, and centre, you know, everywhere. That's not mm-hmm. what I mean. What I mean is to use that energy that's within all of us to actually go, no, let's do something positive and creative for this. And I often ask people, you know, when you feel angry, are you bored? Are you lethargic? No.
Interesting point, because it's that strength of that emotion that drives the change, drives the thought, drives the next thing, and maybe fires up the brain to do something else. Interesting concept. I really like that. No, I hadn't considered that in that way. And you're right, those individuals endured awful circumstances, but managed to mold it into something else. And as you were going through your list, interestingly, you chose male, and you know, we all have different role models. I was thinking of Barack Obama, and yeah. I've always admired his leadership and how he led, because I always thought he led with great humility and compassion. Yeah. And he was always so composed. And there's a meme, I know it's a meme, but it just inspired me so much, where he was fist bumping the janitor.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned that before. It just moved me, because I thought, there you go, you know, the leader of the Western world, and he had respect for, you know, the janitor, and I love that. And I think to have that quality as a leader, and is just, no one is bigger than any other human being in that sense. But no, it's interesting to see what people are inspired by and who inspires them.
I think also, this idea of, I think for a long time, and certainly when I started work, there was this view that you had to be very tough, and there was not that much room for empathy. And that's obviously been much more crept into the corporate world and in the working world over the last sort of 10 to 20 years, I guess. But another person that deeply inspired me was a guy called Dick Winters, that was in a series a long time ago called Band of Brothers. But I've read all the books. But he was this, you know, mild-mannered army recruit, originally a paratrooper, who was highly effective, despite the fact that everyone just thought he didn't have the right caliber to be that, you know, that great man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just goes to show that there isn't that single type of person that can be a leader. Anyone can be a leader.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that you're born to do it. It's not that you don't have the right skills. If you dedicate yourself and decide that that's what you want to do, I believe that anyone could do that. And
mm-hmm.
it is about being humble enough to admit you are vulnerable as well. And, mm-hmm. and that's the thing I think that Barack Obama, as you mentioned, is incredibly great at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those qualities, I think definitely there's been a shift, and to have compassion, empathy, and show the vulnerability with a bit more authenticity. For me, it was more about the whole person rather than the work person.
Yeah.
You know, the person shows up for work, but you have absolutely no idea what went on and, you know, the previous evening, and just having that awareness. You don't necessarily need to know what went on, but if you have that awareness that they exist outside the 9 to 5, just that little bit of compassion and, you know, giving someone a bit of understanding, I think it just reaps so many rewards. And that having that awareness pays dividends, I think, just a little bit of compassion. And yeah, everyone's different, and everyone has it in them, but it's molding to the circumstances and learning from different people, really, and the different environments as well. You can have the military style, or you can have you know, something a bit more. Google always strikes me as having very relaxed leadership, but then sometimes you read things and it's not that relaxed, if you see what I mean.
What's really interesting about culture is that you could say that Google, you know, it's really interesting you say Google has that culture, but you've got to realize that you've got microcultures in every organization too. So every different, you know, ultimately every different line manager is creating like their own microculture mm-hmm. underneath that bigger culture, but there are parts of that culture that disseminate across the board. I think one of the things for me that's always been really important is treating everyone as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very difficult when there's a kind of broad brush approach to everyone. You know, if someone makes a mistake in a team, then the whole team is punished. That's very, very, very difficult for anyone to kind of feel engaged in that kind of situation, I think. So I've always gone out of my way to really understand the people that work with me and for me.
Mm.
And that, you know, we aren't professionals, you know, 24/7. We are human beings first and foremost. And actually, if you take some time to understand the people working for you, again, particularly if you've got that limited amount of time with people just appreciate it.
Yeah,
they really do.
And for me I look behind the mistake. I look at what happened with the mistake. Was it, you know, was it something that I didn't convey correctly? Is there something wrong with the system? Is there, you know, will you make the same mistake again? And I always think people need to be free to make mistakes, because that's how you learn. But if you're in a culture of fear because you made a mistake, for me personally, you need to start looking elsewhere, because you can't grow and flourish in, you know, that with that terror.
And I think also if you're in a leadership position, you could be a leader through influence in a project team, for example. You could be leading people, any situation where you're seen as a leader. If you don't tolerate mistakes, guess what happens next time?
Mm-hmm.
People don't innovate. They don't mm-hmm. want to invent new things. They don't want to be creative, because they might make a mistake and be told off.
Mm-hmm.
And are they going to express their opinions about new ideas? No.
Or worse, they hide the mistake.
Yeah.
And it'll all come out. Yeah. For me, that's something I learned.
Yeah.
Quite, you know, you learn as you progress. You have to be able to be, it sounds a bit of a contradiction, you have to be free to make mistakes, but you can't work in that environment. Like you said, there'll be no innovation, there'll be no let's try that, but you have to be free to make a mistake, own it, apologize and put it right. But no, it's interesting, isn't it?
So as a leader as well, it's about showing people when you make mistakes too.
Yeah.
Because guess what, if you cover up your own mistakes, or you don't admit to being, you know, if you don't admit to having some sort of fallibility, then people will sort of think, oh, well, you know, why is she so confident, and why, you know, she never makes any mistakes.
Yeah.
And that was something I had to learn very quite early on too. Mm-hmm. It's okay not to be perfect.
Absolutely. And that is another, that's another thing, isn't it? That perfectionism. And I think the minute that you say to your team, oh, I made a mistake, I did this, there might be that, oh, you made a mistake, but you have to humanize yourself, and you have to use that, I think, as a teachable moment to say, look, you know, I made a mistake and I put it right and it's fine. But I also think that puts the dialogue out there to make those people think, well, you know what, oh, that's okay, if I make a mistake I can share that too. But you just can't lead with perfectionism. It's just not healthy. But no, it is, it's just, it's fascinating, all the different styles. So how do you manage work-life balance then? Because working for yourself, it can take over, or you can plan it out to perfection. How do you manage your work-life balance, or harmony, as some people choose to use?
I don't like the word balance actually, because it implies you have to give and take. And I think actually it needs to be, think about the word harmony versus the word balance. There's always with balance, there's always a risk that you can tip too far the other way. And that makes me feel quite uncomfortable actually, whereas the harmony makes me feel a lot more relaxed.
And balance makes it, it gives the presumption that there is balance, if you see what I mean. How's your balance? Oh yes, it's balanced.
I'm a very lateral thinker, so I tend to be kind of all over the place, doing like, number one, number five, number eight, number two. So I actually need to introduce a level of structure and organization into my life, to the point that I'm not naturally structured or organized, but I mean, lots of people who've worked with me will think that I'm incredibly organized and structured, but I am not. So that'll be a
And
massive surprise.
I'm nodding because I'm thinking tech, IT, structure, hierarchy. Interesting.
It's interesting as well. That's been a big reflection for me leaving a corporate career, in that I think I found myself in a situation where I was perceived as very good at something, but it wasn't always necessarily something I enjoyed. And I had, I'm not naturally an organized person. I find that I have to do it to a certain level to get that harmony. But what I've realized is that too far in the other direction takes away all the fun as well. So there needs to be that level of fluidity in my life. However, I do need some rigidity in terms of, okay, you do get up at like 7 a.m. You do this. You do need to do exercise. You need to make some time for hobbies. You need to make some time for cooking. And in some weird way, actually not working, flat out 50 hours a week, I found it more difficult. Because I've got more time. The most easy point of my life was when I was doing a full-time master's and had a full-time job. So that says a lot about how
Is
my
that
behavior.
principle, if you want something done, give it to a busy person, because the wheel is in motion and everything's, how interesting. And that's probably because in when in the previous days you had that rigidity and you had that timetable of, that beat, dun, 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 everything was going. And then because that's been removed, that's really interesting.
Definitely improved as I got busier, but the first couple of months, few months, it was tricky because I felt almost like, oh, it's a bit like being retired,
That's what a lot of retirees say, isn't it? I don't know how I had time for work. But you said something really interesting there, and I've said it myself. Sometimes the things we are best at, we don't like doing them. And I've had that conversation quite recently, and I've had to sit down and think to myself, yes, I have to acknowledge that I'm good at this, but it's not necessarily the thing that I like most. But I think that phenomenon is really interesting, and I wonder, I would love to know a little bit more about that. But I've known a lot of people have said that to me, and I've had that conversation, and it's just acknowledging, yeah, I'm good at that. It doesn't particularly light me up, but it's just another facet of things. But you wonder, because you're good at it, it's just very weird, isn't it? Is it this because you spent so long doing it, or it's
Yes,
something that comes naturally?
there is a difference between aptitude and ability, obviously. And you can learn a skill, like anyone can learn a skill. But it from a, thinking about your brain, we're all tuned slightly differently. Our brains all have a go-to that's slightly different. Yours and mine would be very different. But just because your brain goes to something first doesn't mean you're good at it. And just because you're good at something doesn't mean it's what your brain likes. So if you get your head around that, and that's what I had to realize, is that my brain's go-to is not structure. My brain's go-to is, oh, let's draw a nice picture and let's be creative. And I'd actually probably been suppressing that in my life. This gives me a great opportunity to be a lot more creative and try lots of new things. And I don't really care if some of them don't work, because I'm an experimenter. That's what I've realized. And it's very difficult to experiment when you're in a corporate world, because people are saying to me, "What are you doing over there? What, you're in this job. What are you looking over there for?"
Yeah, and you've got that freedom now, haven't you, to maybe go down the rabbit hole, make a discovery, and do something else. And the corporate life is very, very rigid. I'm quite lucky because I work in communications, and I can be very creative, and I love that. I can definitely spend some time experimenting and looking at other things.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Anyone listening to this who worked with me were going, well, she did loads of creative things. I think the difference is that you're still working for someone else and you're still kind of have to work within certain boundaries. I mean, I was always a business focused person rather than a technology focused person. Technology is the enabler that helps businesses run, rather than getting into the nitty gritty details. I think sometimes there's a perception that when you work in technology, you're like on a keyboard all day writing code. I used to be able to write code, but I wouldn't have a clue now, I have to say.
Wow. Yeah. Just so it's so interesting, isn't it? The perception of everything. But you're working to someone else's ideal and someone else's spec and requirements. But when you're working for yourself, you're setting the tone. So my final question for you, Angela, what legacy do you hope to leave as a leader and how do you measure the impact of your leadership?
So I would like to leave a legacy. I mentioned this earlier already, but my legacy I would like to leave is around trust in leadership. And I think this idea that my vision around organisations being built on trust rather than anything else, first of all, because I think there's always a temptation to go, let's focus on this thing or that thing. You know, it might be making sure that the team is effective in terms of delivering business results. And for me, that's important. But unless you have that foundation, it's a bit like building the house on the sand. You haven't got that kind of solid foundation. And that's the legacy that I would like to leave. And I think this goes back to sort of thinking about how I measure my impact as a leader, which is I would like to leave something better than I found it. So it's the view of success that I mentioned earlier from the Midnight Library as well. I think when I've interacted with people, it'd be like nice to think that I've left them with something that really resonates with them. I think the whole idea of trust is gained from your experience of how you interact with people. And that's only, you only get that through building kind of genuine connections, not fleeting ones. And I think that's one of the major challenges that we've got in the future, not only to do with leadership, but also to do with life in general, you know, with AI and technology becoming very mainstream now. When I moved into technology, it was, you know, my friends thought, what's she going to do over there in that weird company? That's not the norm now. You know, it's very different. And I think at the moment we're in a situation where we've got to figure out human creativity and empathy and how that works together with AI. AI is in a very early stage. I personally think it's really exciting time to be working with organizations. I'm really excited to figure out this for myself. I'm always like dabbling in this and thinking about how it can help my business. But a lot of the conversations I have now is, I just don't know how to integrate this into my leadership. How are we actually going to do that? And people are still trying to figure that out.
So interesting that you brought AI up. I don't think I've spoken about it in the podcast previously. I'm really interested in AI and with regards to new tech. I try to keep up with it, because I hate a discussion going on around me and I don't understand what they're talking about. So I love something that gets me Googling and researching. And I think, yeah, to me, it just looks like we're only just beginning and the possibilities are truly endless. But I sense a lot of fear. And we've had discussions, you know, with various people around it, and some people are genuinely terrified. And I understand that, but that's a lack of knowledge. But the possibilities are truly, you know, amazing. And I think there's a lot of, you know, we've got a long way to go in terms of education and teaching people, you know, that this is what, you know, this is what it can do. The medical world looks incredible, things that can go on there. But the moment I think the fear is AI is going to destroy the world and it's going to take over. And I do think there's a lot of education that needs to be done. But for me personally, right at this very moment, the little tiny little bit that I know about it, I'm just blown away with the things that I can do, and it can make my life so much easier, and it can help speed things up. And I'm only talking about the basic things. You know, your knowledge must be vast, because you've got a, you know, bit of a background. You know, maybe you've seen more.
Well, interestingly, I think the one piece of advice I can give if people are interested in exploring this area, and this is a general piece of advice actually anyway, is seek out people that know about this and just have conversations with them. And I think one of the really foundational things throughout my journey has been not relying on one person to give me all of that. So not relying on one mentor is really important, particularly at the moment, because you need people with like different perspectives, different skill bases, different levels of experience. I would love to have a mentor, for example, at the moment that was much younger than me, because it would give me kind of insight into lots of things that I'm just not exposed to at the moment. Like, for example, how to use Instagram properly. That would be lovely.
Yeah. Well, I can put you in touch with someone who can do that for you. I know a really lovely lady, but I shall send you her details. Well, thank you so much, Angela. I've really enjoyed this. But before we go, where can we find out more by Angela Scott online?
So I am on Instagram. My handle is Lead with Angela Scott. You can also find me on LinkedIn, where I'm most active. And my website is thecultureprinciple.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I have absolutely loved talking to you. I could talk to you for hours about all this stuff, but it's been an absolute joy and an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you for listening to the Leadership Insights podcast today, and special thanks to my lovely guest, Angela Scott. Join me on the next episode for more inspirational leadership stories and insights. You can follow me on Instagram at Coach Amanda Jane, or visit my website, amandajane.co.uk. Bye for now.